You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Radio B. Radio for bibliophiles. It's Loose Reads with Time Out Bookstore.
Turn the microphones on. Good morning, Siri. How's it going?
Morena, morena, Johnny. Pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. I just quickly ran out to the BFM kitchen and made myself another coffee. So yeah, the next 45 minutes should be pretty good.
Hey, it smells great in here. Today I brought with me a book that was actually originally printed in 1989, and Faber has just reprinted it. It's by Barbara Kingsolver, and it's called Holding the Line. And a lot of people, I'm sure, are like pretty familiar with Barbara Kingsolver. She wrote Poisonwood Bible, which I don't know. I feel like every millennial has probably been given that book by their mum to read. It is so amazing. And she recently won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction for Demon Copperhead, the Women's Prize for fiction for The Lacuna, and the National Book Award Lifetime Achievement Award. So yeah, she's like very familiar in the literary circles. But what is, I think, like a little bit more surprising, or at least to me, is that before she was a novelist, Barbara Kingsolver had like a pretty long career as a journalist, and primarily covering the areas where she lives. So she lives in Appalachia, which was also super surprising to me. I mean, usually I think that like those kind of literary intellectuals you think of as being like bicoastal, but she has grown up and lived her entire life in the Appalachians. And Holding the Line is such a fascinating sort of moment in history that it captures. It looks at the 1983 Great Arizona mine strike, which was like primarily led by women. So it looks at the relationship between this company, Phelps Dodge Mining Company, and its workers. So in the like 1940s, I think it was like 1943, 1944, of course, companies like mining companies lost a lot of their workers to the war efforts, and so tried to replace those workers with women who, as you can imagine, had like who, even though like according to Barbara Kingsolver, like a lot of them became very important to the workplaces that they were employed at, definitely had a very difficult time from their male colleagues and male bosses in the 1940s. So I guess that's where their history of like hiring women sort of started for like a job that is quite masculine and quite laborious. And through the book, Barbara Kingsolver interviews these women, and many of them she describes as like sort of very like slight and small, but incredibly wiry and strong. And in the 70s and 80s, so in the 40s, obviously it's like largely sort of white local Arizonian women who are working at this mining company. And in the 70s and 80s, the demographics of those female workers starts to change. So as there's like sort of this, the beginnings of the increase in like Mexican migration across the border into Arizona meant that like a lot of the women that were employed were sort of undocumented Mexican women, a real mix of like sort of single mothers, daughters sort of fleeing their circumstances. So I think what she's really trying to capture and like telling us about that demographics is like this is really like a group of women who live incredibly precarious, and even though they're not like just vulnerable, they live incredibly vulnerable lives. Like they're livelihoods are entirely tied to their ability to continue working here at this mining company. And so in the 80s, like copper production starts to slow down, and the workers agree to like a wage freeze that the company suggests. But unlike most other wage freezes that happened across other copper mining companies, this company refused to like adjust for increased living costs in their wages. So this kind of led to like a breakdown in negotiations and really sort of sparked the strike. And before, you know, it was really like a few women, including this incredible character named Flossie, who was like bolshy and hard and just like kind of like a real loose unit in the best way. It's like the women who sort of spark the flame for the union strikes that start to occur. And I think what's really interesting, I mean, it was at like an incredibly huge cost to themselves, not only because, you know, these women knew that they wouldn't be paid anything for these like extended periods of time that they would be striking for. So it's like a huge cost to their livelihoods, but also like some of the retaliatory stuff that took place, like both by the company and by like the politicians at the time, was like pretty freaky. Like stuff that to me feels like very like Godfather, horse's head in your bed kind of stuff. You know, like there's this one woman who talked about like her home being filled with like dead chickens one day when she came home. And of course, like the police are like pretty unsympathetic to it. Women who like go hungry and starve as a result of like trying to fight for like these collective rights, and they're happy to incur these costs for like the long term. They're better women than I don't know. You know, like, I mean, I don't think I would be a scab, but I think when you read about how grueling some of their conditions became, how worried they became about like where food for like their kids would come for the next month, it's like incredibly courageous and incredibly I think it takes probably like a kind of moral center that I think a lot of people would be hard pressed to So it's like a real fascinating part of history, but it also, I think, outside of the lives of these like really fascinating and strong women, it also kind of looks at like how looks at like the sort of fractures within the union. It looks at like the governor at the time was this Governor Babbitt, who was a Democratic governor, and he very much took the side of like the mining company, and during one of the strikes deployed the National Guard to like en masse arrest people, to beat strikers. So even in the face of like these incredibly powerful forces that are trying to silence them, these are a group of women that tried as hard as they could to maintain and, as the title suggests, hold the line. So yeah, I think if you're a fan of people like Barbara Ehrenreich, those kind of 70s like hardcore journos who are sort of writing about like really interesting, writing about like class and social class and you know, how like people managed to survive under precarious conditions, I think this is like a really fascinating read. I think it also is probably something that feels like very interesting for now, like how collective bargaining can work when it does feel like you know, companies have like a lot of power. Yeah, it's such an interesting read. And I think even if you're not that interested in like the politics of class, I think like the stories of like who these women are like fascinating. Yeah.
Excellent. So we're talking about Holding the Line, Women in the Great Arizona Mine Strike of 1983 by Barbara Kingsolver. The first time back in print for a while?
Yeah, first time back in print since like 1989.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And I'm really not sure even now like why they chose to reprint it, but I would say I think it feels like super, super fitting for the times. Yeah.
Holy moly. All right. Yeah. Hey, so on the shelf now at Time Out?
On the shelf now at Time Out. And also, if I could just do like a tiny little plug, Time Out is also hosting the Onyx Storm launch party tonight. It's a midnight release. If you're looking for something really exciting to do on a Monday night, you can be there. There'll be like a little video message from Rebecca Yaros. And the first 30 people who come in get like free Lux signed special edition. So if you're interested in coming along, please email us at books@timeout.co.nz. I think we've got about 10 places left. So yeah, shoot us an email.
Excellent. Hey, thank you, Siri. And cheers to Time Out Bookstore.
Hey, thanks, Johnny. Bye.
That was Loose Reads with Time Out Bookstore on 95BFM.
BFM.
It's really softened up and it's gone smooth.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.